Hi, everybody. All right?
Morning, Dave.
Nice to see you lot. It's nice up here. You get to see all of you. Wow, I've been looking forward to this talk. Actually, Mum, if you're listening, you need to turn the podcast off now. Okay, so the talk this morning is called How to Talk About Sex as British Christians. Now, Ojan came up to me earlier on and he said, what's this? And I said, oh, I was worried that it was about the content. He went, I think you mean EU Christians. So I want to future-proof this, and we're going to call it How to Talk About Sex as Brexit Christians, so that we can use it in the future. Anyway, over the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about sex and relationships, and these aren't subjects I think we really talk about in church too much. But I guess our prayer as a leadership is that as we look around this stuff, we need to give ourselves permission to talk about it. And I think also we want to examine what healthy lifestyles and relationships look like. And I think one of the issues that we don't really get into is we don't really know how to talk about sex in helpful ways. And that's kind of what I want to explore a little bit today. Okay, so let's get down to it. Here's what I think we need to start. So, very, very briefly, a history of sex, animals, and angels. We should be able to do this in about a page or so. All right? So, the scriptures talk about sex in two ways. Firstly, procreation. And in Genesis 1, it says this. So, God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number. So, essentially, sex is a mechanism for more people to be created. And in the beginning, God gives a commandment to Adam and Eve to increase in number. So, procreate. Okay. Secondly, it's about relationship. So, immediately after the woman is created, the Genesis poem talks about the flow of what happens next in the procreative cycle. And in Genesis 2, it says this, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. So, sex is a human act, but it also involves God, or at least it's initiated by God. It's something that people do, but it's also a flow of where the human race is going under God. So, sex was part of the plan when he made people. Maybe I can put it like this. Sex is human and it's divine at the same time. Sex is human and it's divine at the same time. Thirdly, God describes where in creation people are made. And it says that we are made a little lower than the angels. And I think Matt actually just mentioned this earlier on. In Hebrews 2:7, it says, you made them a little lower than the angels. You crowned them with glory and honor. Angels essentially are heavenly beings because they don't have the same physicality as us. But we are different to animals. In Corinthians 15, it says, all flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of flesh for men, another flesh of beasts, another of fish, another of birds. So there's a separation there. So animals are the manifestation of primal urges. They can't control their need to procreate. It's completely physical, and that is as far as we know of what the scriptures say about that. So we live inside this space between angels and animals. So I guess we would recognize that the animal kingdom is kind of primal, and we have a sense of that too. After all, aren't we all just animals in the bedroom? Actually, don't answer that. Or do we feel like angels, completely separate and devoid of these sensations? Well, of course, the answer is neither. We actually feel exactly like what we are made. We feel like we live somewhere in between. So we know we're not just the sum of our urges, but we are also not without them. So how do we understand sex properly now we've found our space in creation? Well, first, let's see how the scriptures talk about sex elsewhere. Are you feeling really uncomfortable? Good. It's not going to get any better. You're not listening, Mum, right? No. So actually, sex appears all the way through the Bible. And God doesn't actually seem to have a problem with kind of sexy language, okay? So the Proverbs have got things like this. This is Proverbs 5. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Yeah, you weren't feeling weird before, you are now, right? And Song of Solomon says this, kiss me and kiss me again, for your love is sweeter than wine. Do you know the Bible is outlawed in certain places around the world because of the Song of Solomon being too saucy? Isn't it amazing? The Bible is actually can't be used. So the Bible seems to be at ease with the act of sex and language around sex. In fact, it celebrates it. But that then begs the question, why as Christians do we not feel and talk about this stuff in the same way? Well, I would argue that our worldview of sex has kind of changed and it's been eroded by mass media, and we're constantly presented with this kind of permanent new view of sexuality. We're told what good-looking people look like. We're told what we ought to aspire to sexually. We're told what we need to learn from, and we're given resources to fulfill our sexual needs. Sex actually has kind of become an industry, but it's got an unbiblical frame of reference. Sex has become fully about the body and not about the spirit, and that affects us all deeply, even though sometimes we don't know it. We've forgotten that the body and the spirit are not to be separated, as they're intrinsically connected, as we saw in the earlier scriptures. So here's a couple of examples. In the beginning, it says that Adam and Eve were both naked and were not ashamed. They were completely at ease with their sexuality being part of who they were. After all, they were human. They were the first humans. They would have been having sex. And they were with God. But there was no shame. They would have been having sex. They were with God. And there was no shame. Secondly, the Torah, which is the first few books of the Bible, refers to this root word called, and this is quite hard to say, Yod Delet Ayin. Can you say that with me? Rod Delet Ayin. And it means to know. It's like a deep knowledge. And it refers, or it describes, sexual union as a knowledge of your partner in mind and body and soul. Essentially, it means to know the whole person, including their heart and mind. Now, when you look back at the Song of Solomon at first glance, here is a lover talking to his partner, but actually there is far more going on. This book is from a section of the Bible called the Wisdom Literature. And this is love poetry. And many times the lover is referred to in light of a garden. Have a look at this. In the Song of Solomon, in chapter 4, it says, dear lover and friend, you are a secret garden, a private and pure fountain. Body and soul, you are paradise, a whole orchard of succulent fruits, ripe apricots and peaches, oranges and pears, nut trees and cinnamon and all scented woods, mint and lavender and all herbs aromatic, a garden fountain, sparkling and splashing, fed by spring waters from the Lebanon mountains. Wake up, north wind, get moving. South wind, breathe on my garden. Fill the air with spice fragrance. Oh, let my lover enter his garden. Yes, let him eat the fine, ripe fruits. And the beauty of the bride is often expressed in geographic or agricultural terms. Her body is like a rolling landscape. Her breasts are like spiced mountains. Her hair like goats leaping down the slopes of Gilead. Her neck is like the Tower of David set with warrior's eyes. She is as beautiful as Tirzah, lovely as Jerusalem. Her eyes, pools in Heshbon. Her nose is like the Tower of Lebanon. Her head is like Mount Carmel. This is the love of the king for his country and his people. So this is human emotion, but it's divine, because actually God is in it. And in this poem, it's an earthly king, but it's also a love poem from God about how he feels about his people. God is using sexual language to describe his feelings. The physical is an extension of relationship. Sex is what happens when we want to be even closer. So sit with that with a second, because we actually have to kind of take that in. I think we've kind of thrown the baby out with the bathwater. And I would argue that our litmus test about sex has become all about the physicality and not about God being involved. And as Christians, we have let worldly views rob us of the full picture of sexuality as God would have it. Now, I don't know how that kind of sits with you. I'm sure for some of you, this is kind of a new idea even. Maybe others feel uncomfortable. But in light of it, I want to hold up how we feel about sex. And then ultimately, our relationships against it. Is this whole thing about animals and angels built around trying to trip us up, keeping us mentally on this really, really thin wire? Is sexual purity a measure of how we call ourselves holy? The more I've wrestled with these things, another question has hung over this whole thing as an umbrella. Where's the freedom in this for us? Let's be frank, how we talk about sex has got shame attached to it. I would say freedom to talk about this stuff is the start of our problems. The British just don't talk about sex. And there's a reason we don't talk about it. Culturally, in Christian circles, we think of this stuff as kind of unnecessary or dirty. And maybe we've even been brought up like that. Maybe your parents would never talk about this stuff around you. Talk about sex has become kind of maybe something that teenage boys talk about. And it's absolutely never helpful. Like it happens over there. I tell you why this fascinates me. I think if I was to say to you, is God in the room when you're making love to your wife? Is there a sexuality to the Holy Spirit moving in you as he whispers words in your ear that are intimately woven, particularly for you? For many of you, I would argue, and I'm not fully out of the woods on this, it can make you feel really uncomfortable. And I think that's really interesting. But if, as Paul says in Ephesians, that God is in all and through all, why would he not be involved in this deepest connection of what we share with someone? So let's do this. Let's remove ourselves from the word sex for a second. If we talk about sexual acts, what we are talking about is connection. We're talking about intimacy. The gift that's been given to us isn't a dirty word, but it is a physical manifestation of connection, a connection between two people. That's why we use phrases like making love. It mentally separates our feelings of urge to feelings of connection, and that is good. And it's also why people who speak about the red light district, for instance, say it's the least sexy place on earth, because it's completely devoid of meaningful connection. I think we've misrepresented sexuality in our projection of our values as well. If we pride ourselves on waiting for sex before getting married, I have to ask, what are we actually proud of? Is it the fact that it was the right thing to do? Or is it the fact that you have proved that you have an astounding level of self-control? Is what we are saying here that we are more holy than the next person? Or telling the unbeliever that we are more disciplined than them? Like some people who frequent the gym without slipping up and eating cake. Is that our message about how we relate to physically as human beings? Or are we talking about sex as beautifully being connected in a way of loving God. Could we exchange the word sex for covenant, relationship, connectedness? Wouldn't it be a far more beautiful way of what all this is about and about how we talk about it? Shame is a big deal about around sex. And for those of us who might have struggled with pornography, for those of us who looked at people the wrong way, for those who keep struggling with this stuff, shame is like a cancer. We promise ourselves that we won't do it again. We wonder what's wrong with us. And most of the time, we do this stuff entirely alone. We do it alone because what words have we learned over the years to talk about it? How can we find a way to talk about this stuff when people just don't talk about this stuff? So we convince ourselves that it's only us and other people aren't doing it or don't have those thoughts or do these actions. And that's where shame sets in. Shame works because that voice in our heads tells us that we are different. We alone have failed and we alone are thinking thoughts or committing sin around sex that nobody else is. And I want to say, brothers and sisters, it's rubbish. It's rubbish. And it's a lie. And we need to start thinking and talking about this stuff. The scriptures, as we have seen, are full of images about the fact that we're relational beings. It's not good for people to be lonely. We need to be connected to God and to each other. And I would argue that sexual sin or bad relationships occur because we try and forge connections in the wrong places or in the wrong way. Ultimately, we went after something because we wanted to connect, but actually it was a lie. It never delivered. Or maybe we went after something because it would make us feel alive or more human, feel excited. And I think it's the same thing. We are looking for connection. We want this thing in front of us to light something up in us, but it doesn't. Don't you find it interesting that the healthiest sexual relationships almost model the scriptures about God talking about us and Him? Sexuality is about reaching out for connection. Sex is about relationship. So if I was to say to you that sexual sin at its deepest level is about people feeling disconnected, that might be a way that you've never thought about it before. That sentence may even make you angry. When you think about that person who's hurt you or, you know, done something to you. Or maybe you might find it helpful. But what I hope at least is that it means that we can at least start to frame this part of our lives in a way that removes unhelpful judgment and introduces opportunity to work out where the disconnections, or maybe even more importantly, we can figure out how to make fresh, good, new connections. Maybe we can start to examine what it is actually that we're really after. Or maybe we can introduce celebration into our relationships as well. And as I grow in my marriage, I would love to be more intimate with Carly, more connected, more open, more like the relationship with Adam and Eve in the garden. Because it isn't just about physicality, it's about connection. So a few concluding observations now that you're all... My prayer is that as we examine this stuff and start to unpack it, that many of us will move from a position of personal shame and start talking. That those of us who can't get past the language that we've been indoctrinated with can start to use language around connection. And more than all of this, that God is in all and through all and reminds you that you were made in His image. He wants you to thrive and only convicts when we're wrong. The rest is up to us to keep trying to put in front and center and walking with our brothers and sisters towards deeper connections in our relationships, in our marriages and in our singleness. I would love it if our community could look at us and see a fresh beauty in our discussions around relationships. one where sex and God are not divorced from each other, that we actually celebrate our humanness, and that sex is a gift from God, and the best sex is when we are at our closest in relationship first. But there's another part to this as well. I think we need to model not only this to the adults around us as we start to talk about it, but show that we are not defined by this shame. And I would love for our young people to see the humanness in all of us, but also for us to bring the heart of God into the centre of these subjects. I want our kids to have language to talk about this so that they don't go into the future thinking it's just them, or that they should be ashamed because they're struggling. Quite passionate about that. And lastly, as we've looked at sex as about being about physicality, I think there's a bit of a picture of forever in it as well. When we model sexuality with beauty and passion correctly, it actually points to God. It actually is about God's kingdom on earth. It's a marker, it's a signpost, a beacon of God's intimate design. Maybe I'm actually saying that sex is evangelistic. That there is a reason that the book of Revelation speaks about the final thing happening in this world being a wedding celebration where Jesus takes his bride. That's us. A bridegroom takes his bride. That's the last thing that happens. Could there be anything more intimate? And I ache for that embrace one day, but I want to model that right here, right now, in all the aspects of my life as well. So you'll be glad I'm going to finish now. But I think it would be good if we could respond in prayer this morning. Maybe some of this stuff has kind of resonated with you. Maybe you want to move from a place of shame to understanding when you are recognizing that connections are kind of missing. Maybe you want to make yourself accountable for your thoughts and your urges. Maybe you want to move from judgment to freedom with those who have hurt you. Maybe those urges have never been a problem for you, but you find in yourself judging other people who maybe do struggle with those urges. Maybe you want to start a new path, working out how you can redirect your eyes or thoughts to new healthy connections. Maybe it's 100 things in between, I don't know. But I know that God in every area of our lives wants to have intimacy and connection, not shame. And I think, just possibly, that sounds like a healthy sex life. Amen.